I'm not going to bother explaining why I'm giving this shiur at this particular point in history. What I will say is that the amount of what I would call misinformation, which I hear and I see, finally got the best of me, so therefore I responded. I would say like the main response really is towards the kind of people who will make a very short sentence and say something to the effect that Judaism says and so on and so forth, and you know, abortion is absolutely allowed, it's absolutely not allowed, and it's more complex, and it's and I don't know how someone can speak in this particular case of Judaism per se. I'm saying that there are a lot of opinions, but I'm going to say something as I start, which is probably one of the more important things that we need to recognize in terms of approaching this particular topic. And there's something about it which is really in any topic that we approach. And that is that whenever you're dealing with something in halacha, the first question is, what are we dealing with? Are we dealing with the Torah law, rabbinic law, custom, so on? I tell people who unfortunately are starting Shiva, I tell them that Shiva Avelut is a combination of almost no Torah law, assuming the person's already buried, very little rabbinic law, lots of customs and lots of superstition, lots of guilt. So you need to know by each particular thing that you think you're supposed to be doing, which one of all those things is it at this particular point. This year in Israel has been Shemitah, so one of the first things that needs to be clarified is Shemitah Bizman Hazeh. Is it a Torah law? Is it rabbinic law? Is it less? People are very surprised when they find out what it actually may say in the Shulchan Aruch, but that's not the topic for right now. So when it comes to abortion, and again, we need to define things in a much better way, which means in according to Jewish tradition, is abortion ever allowed? I think most of us will know that the answer to that, I hope at least we know the answer to that, is yes. And then the question is going to be, under what conditions is it going to be allowed? So that's also something that needs to be then clarified. So as I said, let's start with the following observation. And once you understand this, then everything else will hopefully make a lot more sense. And I'm going to formulate this, I hope, very carefully and in a way that should not be subject to more than one interpretation. The question as to whether a woman can have an abortion by choice, when I say abortion by choice, without any kind of medical situation, either for her or for the fetus, so I'm going to say that again, the question of whether an abortion can be done by choice without any medical situation for the mother or the fetus is not discussed in the Talmud. Was that a clear enough statement? It is not discussed in the Talmud. So all people who tell me, yes, it's absolutely murder, realize that you're saying that it's murder, even though I'm not going to say the Talmud doesn't know it. I'm just going to say the Talmud doesn't say it. It could be that for you it's obvious, or it could be for someone else it's obvious, but nonetheless, the Talmud doesn't say it. And because the Talmud doesn't say it, what's going to end up happening is that the range of opinions in this particular question is going to be significantly broader than lots of other questions that come up. So let's say that all over again. You know, whether you can eat, and any example I bring is going to be an example and will be limited. But for example, the question of whether you can eat chicken and milk together is discussed in the Gemara. Okay, not a Torah law, it's a rabbinic law. That is discussed in the Gemara. And by the way, that wasn't universally practiced in the Gemara. There was at least one opinion who felt that it was not prohibited. But I'm saying the parameters of that question become somewhat clear because it is discussed. Anytime you have a question where it's not discussed explicitly in the Gemara, now I added another word there, where it's not discussed explicitly, then you're going to have people working hard in order to try to show and understand and to somehow decipher and discern that it really does say something about it. But I'm going to make this very, very easy for us, and I don't know how long I'm going to talk, and I don't know how much depth I'm going to go into, but I will tell you that at the end of the day, the range of opinions which exist is much more than I think the average person recognizes, which means that some people will tell you, you know, absolutely, and whatever that absolutely is, it may be limited. I have sources I will be happy to share. So what I'm going to start with is the approach, which is starting with a permissive approach to abortion. The permissive approach is compared, and unfortunately, I think we have to do this, is compared to part of the debate that takes place in America. And the American debate is not the halachic debate. So therefore, the absolute right to life and the absolute pro-choice, neither of them are necessarily what we're going to find in the sources, although let's keep our minds open. The first thing that speaks about it is the Mishnah. This is the most important primary source. Ha'isha shehimaksha leled. A woman who is having difficult time giving birth. That means she is pregnant and she is arguably at the end of the ninth month. It's very graphic and I apologize, but it will get the point across. You are allowed to perform an abortion in order to, and even if it means cutting off the fetus piece by piece, because her life takes precedence over the fetus's life. Now that is an absolute value judgment. It could be that theologically in other religions that's not the case. It could be in certain religions that she had a chance for salvation and the fetus hasn't had a chance for salvation, therefore the fetus takes precedence over the mother, she's a sinner, and so on. Over here the Mishnah is quite clear. And I'm going to be clearer in the way that I'm going to explain it. Right now it says, and that for some of us should be reminiscent of the teaching of two people in the desert with one cup of water. The person who brings the water gets to keep the water. Why? Because it's their water. Chayecha kodman. We say your life takes precedence. Why? Why do you have more of a right to live in that case? And the answer is, it's your water. So you have more of a right to live. Now that may be very pragmatic, but over here it says, Yatsa Rubo, and there may be different texts on this, if most of the baby has come out now, and I did just now change the language from fetus to baby, ain't no ginbo, then you cannot touch the baby. She'ain doch nefesh mipnei nefesh, because you cannot push away one life for another life. And yes, I just now translated the word nefesh as life. That nefesh is something which is alive. You can't make that value judgment of which one is alive. Now, there is an inference over here. The inference is that prior to being born, the mother was a nefesh and the fetus was something else. What was it? It's hard to say. So I know that people will say, but in Jewish law, the fetus is considered to be alive 100% and therefore killing it is, or an abortion is murder. That's very nice. But here you have a Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, and again, I'm going to qualify, because the Mishnah is speaking of an extreme case. The extreme case is her life is in danger. One life is in danger, her life takes precedence. Why does her life take precedence? Because it's an established life. But once the baby is born, then you say at that point, you can't push one life instead of another life, and therefore one can infer, I'll say, if you like, I'll use the word perhaps, if it makes you happier, one can infer from this that there's something about this fetus which is not a complete life at this point. You want to say potential life, great. It's just there's something which is missing. If you want to see who says this, Rashi in source number 3, where this is quoted more or less from the Gemara, and it's the third line in Rashi, and the third word, Be'isha hamakshei levu misukenet. We're dealing about a case where a woman's having a hard time giving birth and her life is in danger. The Ketani Reisha, in the first part of the Mishnah, it says, Hachaya, the midwife, Poshetet Yada, will put her hand inside, V'chotcho, umotzioto la'evarim, will go and perform an abortion and take out the fetus even in pieces. Dikolz man shelo yatsa la'avir ha'olam lav nefeshu. Because the whole time that the fetus has not been born yet, it is not considered to be a life. V'nitan lahargo u'lahatzil etimo. And you're allowed to kill it in order to save the mother's life. Aval yatsa rosho, but once the head comes out, ain no ginbo lahargo, then you're not allowed to kill it, to havelei ki yalud, because then it's as if it's born already. V'ein doch nefesh v'nei nefesh. You can't push one life instead of another life. So now, I'm going to say again what I said before. As of right now, we, and I hopefully it's not just me, we, as of what we've seen so far, have absolutely no idea about a woman who wants to have an abortion because she feels she wants to have an abortion. All that we know is that if her life is in danger, then she's allowed to have an abortion even the end of the ninth month. What does it say about somebody, a woman who was raped, or a woman who made a bad decision, or a woman doesn't want another child, or for whatever the reason is, what does that say about the morning after pill, and what does it say about the first trimester, second trimester, the first 40 days? We'll see some of these things may be more significant than others, but all that this Mishnah taught us is even at the end of the ninth month, where I think most of us would have said, but that baby's alive. It has a heartbeat at this point. It is even more than that. It's a viable human being. And to answer the obvious question, well, why didn't they just do a cesarean? Because in those days, the mother never survived the cesarean, which means a cesarean could be done, but you would only save the fetus or then the baby. You would not be able to save the mother in that case because of infection, because, I mean, as it is, you know, sometimes people call it a C-section. I mean, as far as I can tell, that's major abdominal surgery. Having major abdominal surgery back in the day was something which was considered to be life-threatening. They never considered it as a possibility of keeping the mother alive. So today, you can now claim to me, well, maybe this Mishnah is not all that important for the extreme case it put up, and perhaps, but the Mishnah is trying to stress, even the end of the ninth month, you can perform an abortion, and, you know, the whole discussion, so what does Judin say about late-term abortion? Well, all I can say so far, if the mother's life is in danger, it would be allowed. Now, if any of you want to make an argument, hold it. Maybe the mother's life is not in danger, because we just now saw in Rashi, which was a real good inference from the Mishnah, that this fetus is not considered to be alive yet. Okay, you can make that inference. That's not a terrible argument. It actually said that. So, full pause. All that we did so far is one Mishnah. Okay? Next. Next is going to be why Rashi spoke about it in his commentary to the Sanhedrin, because in Sanhedrin, it almost discussed this case, and I'll explain to you what I mean by that. The case in Sanhedrin is something which is called a rodef. A rodef is somebody who is chasing after somebody else, for argument's sake, to kill them. There is actually a philosophical question that could be asked, a legal philosophical question. We are taught that we have a law which we can call a Good Samaritan law, that you're allowed to kill the pursuer, to kill the rodef, to save the potential victim. That's the law. The question which comes up in the Gemara is the reason for this, and this is my formulation. It's not the way the Gemara asks it, but we'll see when we read it that this will make it, I think, very clear. Is the reason that you save the victim because you are acting as a judge, or is the reason you save the victim because you're acting like the police? Is the person pursuing, is the pursuer essentially being judged and given their punishment, but we just are doing this in a preemptive way? Or is it the police trying to stop the crime from taking place? What's the, as we call sometimes, the nafkamina? What's the practical difference? Well, it's going to come up as the practical difference. What if the person pursuing is somebody who's lacking capacity? What if the person, let's say for argument's sake, is a minor? That person, if they stood up in court, would not be punished in court. Police would stop them, presumably, to save the crime. A court would not give the person the punishment. So therefore, a rodef, where the person is a minor, would the person stop the rodef? Now, this is a very chilling and very difficult question. If there is a 9-year-old with a gun about to shoot somebody, do you shoot that 9-year-old to take them out? On the one hand, you can say, well, perhaps of course you do, because why should the victim die just because the person's only 9? On the other hand, someone could say, well, how can you kill a 9-year-old? And I'm not going to resolve that debate, but all that I'll do is I'll show you why the Gemara brought this particular case in. What the Gemara says is as follows. Amar Rav Huna, katan harodef nitan latzilo benafsho. If the person chasing someone to kill them is a katan, which means, again, lacking capacity, lacking understanding, lacking responsibility in a judicial way, he says you nonetheless can kill them to save the person's life. Ksavar, so obviously Rav Huna is of the opinion, rodef enol tzirich hatra, that a rodef doesn't need to be warned, because if you need to be warned, the person needs to have capacity to accept the warning. And it says, therefore, you must say a person who is a rodef doesn't need to be warned. Lo shna gadol v'lo shna katan. Doesn't make a difference if they're an adult or if they're a minor. By the way, this is actually really important for a side point if you wanted to discuss what Judaism's approach is to capital punishment. So on the one hand, you can say, well, of course, take a look in the Torah, how many different people it says gets put to death. So obviously, Judaism's in favor of capital punishment. On the other hand, to actually be guilty of capital punishment, you need 2 witnesses, and you need to warn the person, and the person needs to accept the warning, which means there's a procedure involved in this. So therefore, over here, with a lack of procedure, you can't kill anybody, but in the case of Rodef, Rav Huna's opinion is that the Rodef does not need to be warned. That means, by the way, essentially it means that the person who stops the Rodef, it's not a judicial procedure. It's not the judge. Rather, it really is the police. Eitve, Rav Chista, Rav Huna, Rav Chista then asked Rav Huna, hold it. I have a question if that's the case. If you don't need to warn the kid, that means we don't care about capacity. What about this Mishnah that we just now learned? Yatsa Rosho. Now notice it shifted from Rubo to Rosho. So perhaps it's qualitative and not quantitative. If the baby's head is out, ain't no ginbo, you don't do anything. Lafisha ain't docha nefesh rene nefesh, because you don't push one life away to save another life. V'amai rodefu. Why don't you just say that this baby in the process of being born is a rodef? The Gemara answers, Shani Hatam. No, that case is different. De Mishmaya Karadfila. Because in that case, you say it's from heaven, as it were. I would go far as to say it's a natural process. Now, note something. And this is going to be a critical point in understanding this entire issue, or at least one side of the argument. The Mishnah had two cases. What were the two cases? The first one is when the fetus, let's read it, the woman's having a hard time to give birth, and it says that in that case, where it's still a fetus, you do kill the fetus. But once the fetus has turned into a baby and is being born, then you can't do anything. Why? Because they're both of equal stature. This is a nefesh and that's a nefesh. Which case did Rav Chista ask Rav Huna? The first case or the second case? He asked him, Yatzarosha, which is the second case. He says, why in the second case did you say you don't do anything? Because ultimately, that baby is threatening its mother's life. So why don't you kill the baby also in the second case? First case was fetus. Why don't you kill the baby in the second case? If you just now said that a minor, a kid who has a gun, the nine-year-old with a gun, is considered to be a rodef, why don't you say the same thing about the baby? Now, I want you to, again, this is essential. This Gemara did not speak about abortion. There's no abortion in this Gemara. It's not there. All this Gemara has talked about is a kid who's pursuing somebody. And then, once we're talking about a kid, why not use that application that a kid can be killed also to the earliest kid, a kid who's 7 seconds old, who's threatening his mother's life. And in that case, the Mishnah says, no, you can't make that value judgment. You can't decide, which means you can't say the kid is threatening his mother's life, and that's a natural process. So that's all the Gemara did. What the Rambam does is absolutely magical. When I say magical, I'm not saying that in a good way necessarily. What he does is absolutely magical. And if you go for this, then everything is going to follow. But you're going to see actually how hard the argument is now going to be, and what the Rambam does. Let's read source number 4. This is the Rambam in Hilchot Rotzeach v'Shmirat HaNefesh. Avzu mitzvot lo taseh shelo luchus ha'nefesh ha'rodef. There is a negative commandment that you should not have compassion for the rodef, the person who's threatening somebody's life. Lefichach, therefore, horu chachamim. That's already a little strange. Why did he add the words horu chachamim? Are we dealing with something which is a Torah law, or is this a rabbinic application? Therefore, the rabbis instructed, and anybody who knows the Rambam's language, I mean, he could have used Haruch HaChamim in every single chapter, in half the laws he could have used. If all that it meant is that it's in a rabbinic source. L'fichach Haruch HaChamim, sha'ubra shimak sheleled. Therefore, the rabbis instructed that a woman who's pregnant, who's having a hard time giving birth, you're allowed to lachtoch ha'ubar b'meyeh ha'bein b'sam b'ein b'yad b'nei shehu k'rodef ha'karel o'riga. Why can you kill the fetus? Because it's like a rodef. It's like it's pursuing your life. V'imish ha'tzarosho ain't no gimbo, but once already the baby has begun to be born, then you can't do anything. Why? She'ein doch ha'nefesh v'nei nefesh v'zeo tivo sholam, and that's the way the world works. Did anybody note what the Rambam just now did? The Rambam made believe that the Gemara said something that it didn't say. I hope I'm being clear right now. The Rambam said the reason you're allowed to kill the fetus is because it is a rodef. The Mishnah never said that. The Mishnah implied, and that's the way that we saw Rashi had said it, the reason you can kill this fetus is because the mother's life takes precedence. Not because it's a rodef, because the mother's life takes precedence. What was the inference that we had? Because it is somehow not a nefesh yet. Who actually made that inference? Rashi made that inference. Would the Rambam just now say, no, the reason you can kill the fetus is because it's a rodef? Now, those of you who don't understand what just now happened, the Rambam just now went further than the Gemara went. Because of this Rambam, those who have made an argument, I'm not willing to say all of those, but many of those, who will make the argument that to kill a fetus is considered to be murder in the case where the mother's life is not in danger, are building it on this Rambam because they're saying, why would the Rambam has to use Rodef to justify the killing of the fetus? Just say it's an inferior existence. The fact the Rambam needed to pull out the Rodef argument would imply that if it weren't a Rodef, then one would not be allowed to kill the fetus. Now, if you think that I just now worked really hard, I did. And if you think it was a simple argument, I don't think it is. On the other hand, are there a lot of really prominent rabbis who see this black and white and far as what the Rambam said? Yeah, they'll say the fact the Rambam had to use the Rodef argument shows that if in other cases, you can't. Let me be a little bit clearer. I can't kill somebody walking up the street. It's considered to be murder. When can I take a life? If my life is being threatened or there's an innocent person being threatened. And that's the Rodef argument. The fact that the Rambam needed to bring the Rodef argument in actually implies, but you get what I'm saying? Implies, you can argue if that's right, implies that the only reason you can kill the fetus is because it's a Rodef. And therefore, if the fetus isn't a Rodef, what would be my logical conclusion? Then I would not be allowed to kill it. It would be murder. Now, was that the only way to learn the Mishnah? Absolutely not. Was that the only way to learn that Gemara? Well, that Gemara didn't say anything about a fetus. That Gemara only spoke about the second case where it was already a baby. If you look at Rav Akiva Eiger in source number 7, and I can assure you that not only was Rav Akiva Eiger an Orthodox rabbi, but he was a very, very prominent, extremely prominent posek. This is his commentary on the Mishnah. She'ein doch nefesh nefesh, v'hod lo mikri havlad rodef, d'nitim l'tzil b'nafsho, d'mashma ki rod for achrei gemara Sanhedrin, right? He goes, but notice that in the Mishnah, it didn't call him a rodef. And he goes, in the Rambam, what we just now learned, katav avzu mitzot lo taseh, and he's just quoting the Rambam, and we're not going to quote the whole thing, and he writes, v'hu tamua l'cha'ora. He goes, it's shocking the Rambam can say that. D'ahachal lav mishum rodef atninan aleh. He goes, it's not because the fetus is a rodef. There are biyotze ruba eino ginbo. No, in that next case, once it was being born, we don't say rodef. Elokein atamishim to ubelod nekra nefesh. No, the reason is like, now we can add like we saw in Rashi, is because the fetus is not alive in a certain sense, and that's the reason. It is of a different stature. So that Rambam, which again, I'm insisting is not all that easy, okay, you don't have to trust me on this. Rav Akiva Eiger, as I said, is a pretty good source. Now, what does that do for you in terms of halacha? I don't know what to say yet, but I want to go back and say what I've said so far. The Gemara does not tell us that the killing of a fetus is considered to be murder if it's a non-life and death situation. What it does say is that even at the end of the ninth month, fetal heartbeat, third trimester, you can still kill a fetus to save an existing life. And the implication, and now Rashi, and now we serve Akiva Eiger, the implication is because the fetus is of a lesser of an existence compared to the mother. On the other hand, the Rambam, who brought in the Rodef argument, essentially telling us the reason that you're allowed to kill the fetus is because it's a Rodef, kind of changed the conversation in all of this. He took a Gemara and he flipped the Gemara because the Gemara was not talking about this case and yet the Rambam was. I just want to add that the Rambam in my mind is difficult for two reasons. One I already stated and I want to make sure that we see the second one as well. I want to read the Rambam one more time. Afzu mitzvat lo taseh shelo l'chusa nefesh harodef. One should not have compassion for the road. The fichach horu chachamim. So the horu chachamim already pointed out was problematic. Sha'ubr shimak shalev mutar. Why would the Rambam write mutar and not chayav? Which means if in his first line he says, you're not allowed of compassion for the rodef, therefore, if this fetus is a rodef and it's threatening the mother's life, why did he say you're allowed to? And how far should we take you're allowed to as opposed to you're obligated to? Did this just now say that it's the mother's choice? What if the mother says, no, I've lived my life, let the baby live, and I don't want to live? Is that her choice? Which means even though, you know, I can take the Rambam in a certain way, I'm just pointing out that it's not so simple. The other thing to point out is the Rambam writes that he's kirodef. So what does that kaf hadimyon do? It's like a rodev, which means, is the Rambam necessarily talking about killing the fetus is a rodev? Does that mean it's a Torah law? Or did the whole texture of this Rambam perhaps lead us in the conclusion or the direction that it's a rabbinic law and not a Torah law at all? And I'm going to now go back and say for the third time what I said when I started. What is the status of performing an abortion when it's simply by choice with nobody's life in danger in Judaism? And the answer to that is, I don't know. And when I read this Rambam, I'll add to my not knowing, I don't know what to do with this Rambam. Because I can read it the way that some want to read it. The only way I can do it in an abortion is because the fetus is like a rodef, which means if it's not a rodef, it's murder. On the other hand, there were too many other problems in this Rambam. Why did he write Horul Chachamim? Why did he write Mutar? And why does he write Kirodef? Now, are there answers to all these questions? Yes. Does that necessarily mean that there are no questions? No. The one who is going to take this and go extremely far with this is going to be, and I'm just using him because he is part of the conversation. In source number 12, we have Rav Moshe Feinstein. He's writing in 1977 to Rabbi Tendler, his son-in-law, and he writes, "Levarer sharigat uba asarab isa retzicha bein ba'akum bein Yisrael." I'm here to explain that performing an abortion, either by Jews or non-Jews, is murder. So again, very, very clear what he says. He's quoting over Vishkenu Lamar, and this is like jumping in the middle of this, Lamaran Hagon Rav Chaim Halevi, that's Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who Aser Midin Ritzicha, Velohutar Elam Midin Rodev. So that point is, the fact, I have to do this now, Talmud sing-song, the only reason you can save the fetus because it's a Rodev, that means that killing a fetus, if it's not a Rodev, is murder. But he notes that somebody who he is writing to has quoted the Achiezer. Now, the Achiezer, who you may not know who that is, the Achiezer was somebody who was also an Orthodox rabbi of even more authority than Rav Moshe Feinstein at the time that Rav Moshe is writing this. And that is, that's not an easy statement to make, and maybe people will argue with me on that. Achiezer is of Chaim Ozer Gudzinski, the rabbi of Vilna. You can actually see the name Chaim Ozer now. You see Achiezer. It's of Chaim Ozer Gudzinski. And Reb Chaim Ozer, read this Rambam. Sharam lo tzlachtam rov ela b'yeshiv al mashber. The only reason he needed the rodef is when the woman's already giving birth. The ain't nachon klal. And he's going to start arguing with the way that he read it, and he goes so far as to say at the end that Varei Ba Maran Hagon Reb Chaim Vetirets, and he explains everything, and then he says that Ulchein Ein Lesmoch Bezek Klal Al Divrei Reb Chaim Ozer. He goes, don't rely on Reb Chaim Ozer. So Reb Chaim Ozer, it's not very clear in this quote, and hopefully we'll get clearer as we proceed. Reb Chaim Ozer was permissive in terms of abortion in more cases than Reb Moshe wanted to be, and didn't necessarily believe that it was really a Torah law of murder to kill a fetus. And Reb Moshe is completely respectful of Chaim Ozer. Reb Chaim Ozer was the greatest rabbi in Europe before World War II. And he said, well, if he had seen Reb Chaim, he never would have said this. So he's sort of like pushing it away, but I'm going to say it again, it's not so simple. Then he gets to, V'nei b'sheilat ya'aveitz, re'iti dvarim shalonu lo'omer. So he says, look at Rav Yaakov Emdin, and he says things that you can't even say. I'm not even going to bother what he says right now. And he says, he had a bad day, and just forget that. And you should, ve'ein lahashgiach al tshuvazu, don't pay attention to Rav Yaakov Emdin at all. So far, Rav Chaim Ozer doesn't agree with him, ignore him. Rav Yaakov Emdin, ignore him. And then he says something where I want you to read this and to take this in, because Rav Moshe is actually showing us a great deal of self-awareness. And the only question is, how far are you going to take this? V'katavti kol ze l'inyan ha-pirtza gdola olam. He goes, the reason I'm writing this, in the way I'm writing this, is because in today's world, there is such a, for lack of a better term right now, he used the terminology is pirtza gedola. It means there's a big opening, literally, there's an open, there's like a fence which is opened, which means that there is a huge worldwide problem. Shehamalchiot daharbe medinot, the laws of many countries, hitir l'harogu barim, allow the killing of fetuses. Uvetochen gam roshei medina b'medinat Yisrael. And even in the land of Israel, in the state of Israel, we find that they're permissive in terms of abortion. V'kfar nerigu ubarim la'in mispar. An unbelievable amount of fetuses have been killed, abortions have been performed. Shebizman hazeh ha'od yesh tzorech lasot siag l'torah. And therefore, we need to be even more stringent in today's world. And certainly not to be lenient or to find leniencies when it comes to something which is murder. Now, Rav Moshe is fascinating. I'm going to say it again. He has self-awareness. It is, I'd seen somebody earlier today describe Rav Moshe as saying there's no political agenda. Of course there's a political agenda. He just told you there's a political agenda. Now, maybe you don't like that I use the word political. I apologize. I take it back. Even though Rav Moshe just said there's a political agenda because he considers it to be murder, and anybody who thinks it's not murder, he disagrees with. And then he writes, "L'chein nishtomamti b'roti tshuva michocham echad b'eretz Yisrael hanichtav l'minhal beit achol m'shari tzedek v'nitpas b'choveret asya yud gimel hamatir holodot she'edei b'chinot rofim kishu ubar yoter migimel chodeshim shu ubar hu machlat teisak slapilo u'mitzad zeh hiktim she'etzem harigat uborim hu l'arbei poskim rak midrabanan." So what he just now said is that, and he won't, and notice something, he won't even mention this other rabbi by name. He goes, "I was shocked to see this article, this essay written by a rabbi who he refuses to say by name." He tells you where the journal is, he tells you where to find it, and he tells you that he was answering Shari Tzedek Hospital, which, by the way, is a religious hospital, and has a rabbi of the hospital. And the rabbi of the hospital in those days was the rabbi that he was talking about, who he wouldn't mention by name. And he said, "And I can't believe that he would write such a thing, that in a case of Tay-Sachs, you can perform an abortion and even more than 3 months." Now, what Rav Moshe has acknowledged all along here, whether he would like to acknowledge this or not, is that there's another opinion. And essentially he has said all along the way, ignore the other opinion, ignore Rav Chaim Moshe Gudzinski, ignore Rav Yaakov Emden, ignore this unnamed rabbi. Rather, we need to be strict, and in a world where the atmosphere is so permissive, we need to double down, because I believe that it's murder. Does he know that others don't believe it's murder? Yeah, he knows that. Does he agree with them? No. Is he very, very strong on this? Absolutely. So again, I hope that so far what we've seen is interesting, but you all now know that the path that was taken to establish this as an act of murder is not clear. I'm saying it now for the fourth time. It's not in the Gemara. There's an inference from the Rambam that Rambam itself was not all that simple. Reb Chaim will say it, which is what's going to end up happening is, you know, Reb Chaim is very influential. Rav Moshe Feinstein is very influential. So what's going to happen is that we may, you know, today, if we look at people's articles writing and talking about this, it's going to be somewhat skewed because of the followers of Rav Moshe, the followers of Rav Chaim, and the influence that they're going to have on others. But even what we've read so far should take you, hopefully, to the very clear understanding that there really is another voice. Now, in order to understand the other voice, I want to read, in a certain sense, the opposite of Rav Moshe, and that is, I want to start with the tshuva of Rav Yosef Chaim from Baghdad, the Ben Ish Chai. It's in source number 11. Listen to the case, listen to what he says, and listen to what he quotes. Here's the case. Eshet ish shezinta. Okay, a married woman had an affair. Imuta la lishtot sam hamapila to ubar. Is she permitted to take some kind of a potion which will cause an abortion? And now he'll explain the question. Shela eshet ish shezinta v'nitabra biznut. There was a married woman who had an affair, and now she's pregnant. Imutar lishtot davar shetapila ubar achar shekvar hukar v'nigmar bebitna. So now you see very clearly dealing with the case of in the fifth month already. Fifth month is down the line a little bit. This is not the first trimester. Essentially the question is, can you take her in the car and drive her there? Okay, now the Ben Ish Chai did not necessarily have a car. And what he's saying is, can you facilitate? Are you allowed to help this take place? V'yavila samimeni, or can you go to the doctor and bring back the drugs? Olav, or no. Yerenu marvenu. And v'scharo kaful min hashamayim. And may you be blessed from heaven, double, for helping us with this. Tshuva. Now listen to his tshuva, because as clear as Rav Moshe was, is going to be as unclear, at least at first glance, that the Ben Ish Chai is. And listen what he writes. Tshuva. Devarizeh, regarding this case, Eini rotzeh lashiv b'derech hara'ah, lo le'isur v'lehoter. He says, I don't want to answer. I don't want to tell you what I think. V'rak etik lachem ha'shematzati b'tshuvot ha'achronim she'dibru b'zeh. The only thing I'll do for you is I'm going to scribble down some sources, and he's going to tell them, you know, go to your rabbi, and he'll know what to do. At the very end, I'm just going to read the end now. V'kvar marti she'enini mosif mishali b'davar zeh. I'm not going to tell you what I think. V'eini megale dati. I'm not going to reveal to you my thoughts on this. Rak hatzati lefnei asher ha'divrim ha'niskar la'el. I just mentioned the things that I mentioned. V'yir'e divrei elu le'ezeh chacham. Go show a rabbi what I told you to look at. V'hu yire lo ma lasot. And he's then going to give you a ruling what to do. And God then will bless and so on. So of course now we just want to know, okay, so what is it that he's going to say? So let's go back a little bit. Tshuva, right? I don't want to give an answer. Ra'akitik lechem, what I found. V'hu ki hagon ha'chavat ya'ir, look at Simon Lamed Aleph, nishal ki yotzi b'zeh mamash. He had this almost the same question. And it sounds like he says, it's not the right thing to do. By the way, that does leave somewhat an opening. And go take a look at the Avetz. By the way, if you remember, the Avetz was the one that Rav Moshe said stay away from because, you know, he had a bad day that day. That's Rav Yaakov Emden. And not only does he say it's loud, so he says, take a look at that as well. Rav Moshe Detrani, take a look at what he says as well. So essentially, without my reading any kind of more details of this, but maybe I'll come back to it still, he essentially said, take a look at those three poskim. Who were those poskim? The Chavat Yair, Yaakov Emdin, and the Mitrani. So the Maharit. So let's take a look. Let's start with the Maharit. The Maharit, the reason I'm starting is just simply when they lived, 1568. And he sat on the same beit din with Rav Yosef Karo, so that actually probably makes him also an Orthodox rabbi. So what he's going to do is he's going to say, Uvesof perekam de erechin tnan. At the end of the first chapter of Erechin, there's a Mishnah, and we're just going to stop a second, and we're going to take a look at the Mishnah. And those of you who never learned this Mishnah, and then the Gemara on the Mishnah, so we're going to be a little bit shocked when we see what it is that he says. By the way, Rav Moshe Feinstein not only did not allow abortions, he did not allow it for a Tay-Sachs baby as well, and that was part of his shock in all of this. Erechin, source 18. Ha'isha she'yotza lahoreg. If there's a woman who's guilty of a capital punishment, and she's being taken out to be executed, ein mamtinin la ad she'teled, you don't wait for her to give birth, because that would be considered to be cruel and unusual to put off an execution. By the way, some of you can argue to kill a pregnant woman with a fetus would also be cruel and unusual. But yashva ala mashber, now that term we saw before, that was part of what was troubling Reb Chaim Ozugajinsky. Yashva ala mashber, which means she's already in labor, mamtinin la ad she'teled, then you wait. Pshita, the Gemara says, of course you kill her with the fetus. And why does it say? Gufahi. Now, all of you who have been brought up to believe that the argument, my body, my baby, well, look at that. The Gemara just now said that. The Gemara said, Gufahi. It's her baby. It's her body. And therefore, you can kill her with the fetus. The fetus has no right to live. Why? Because she's being executed. So I don't care if she has, I don't want to say anything else, that it's her body. So it's part of her body. So the Gemara says, no, it's Tirchsaka that can mean a whole Viksiv, Kashay, and he says, no, maybe you would have thought something else. Well, I'm leaving what you may have thought, and I want to move towards the end. And it says, Yashva ala mashber, but if she's already going into labor, my time akivin da akar. Because now it's gufa achrinahu. Because since she started to give birth, now it's considered to be a different body, which means my body, my baby, until starting to give birth. Amar of Yehuda Mar Shmuel, ha'isha otzeit lahareg. Nonetheless, and this, by the way, is going to be a big problem for some people. Nonetheless, if she's being taken out to be killed, you know what you do? Makin ota keneged beit ha'harayon, kidei sheyamu tavad chila, kidei shelo tavo lidei nivul. What you do is you perform an abortion in order that she not have a spontaneous abortion as she's being executed, because having an abortion in the middle, spontaneous abortion in the middle of being executed could be even more humiliating than being executed. So the Gemara just now said, oh, what do we do in those cases? You do an abortion beforehand so that she won't, when you kill her already, then she is killed without the baby. But hold it a second. Who allowed an abortion in this case? Why are you allowed to kill the baby? Now, some of you can argue, well, of course, because she's going to die with the baby, so what does it make a difference? And by the way, note the Rambam rules just like this Gemara, source 19. Bishenigbe dino in mashin oto eli regbi omo. Once found guilty, you don't even wait, killed immediately. Afilo ta ubra in mamtin la ad sheteled, you don't wait for the give birth. Umakina to keneged beit harayon ad sheyemot havlad tchila. Which is the Rambam actually rules that you perform an abortion in this case, and please tell me why you're performing an abortion. Now, I will right now admit that there could be multiple ways to understand this, and that is of no concern to me whatsoever that there are multiple ways, because what intrigues me instead is the source that we started to look at before, because, as I said, it was perhaps the most interesting and the most important. So this was source number 8, the Maharit, Rav Yosef ben Moshe de Trani. Uvesof perakamid erichin tanan ha'isha shiyotzei lareg imamtin le'ad sheteled uperchinim pshita gufi. The Gemara says, but it's her body. Sakudai klimi ho v'kativ asher yashit. And now he goes and quotes the whole Gemara, and he says, right, but nonetheless, makin ota kineged b'derion shelo kideh shemotav la'tchila shelo tovei l'dei nivul, in order for her not to get in a situation of nivul. Alma, bishvil nivul, ha'em, because of the mother's, now I'm going to throw a different word in over here, because of the mother's embarrassment, you are allowed to kill the fetus. Bishvil nivul ha'em, hargim havlad biyadayim, v'lo chashu mishum ibud nefashot. And nobody was concerned there in such a case that it's murder. Hilkach, that when you're dealing with the case of a Jewish woman who has some kind of a need for an abortion, that if there's a need for the mother, just like we see, you can do this to avoid embarrassment, you could therefore do an abortion. I have to stop right here, because obviously this source, And I do have to ask all of the people listening, my sense is that when people learn about abortion in high school, nobody tells them this case. Nobody bothers to say that, okay, let's say there's a 16-year-old girl in high school who gets pregnant, and it will be quite embarrassing if she has to now go through this pregnancy, and the rabbis will all get up and say, well, it's murder and you can't do anything. Well, you just now read a source that said that, and by the way, it wasn't just a source. He has a Gemara that says that you're allowed to do an abortion, and the Rambam rules like this, and he reads, he understands it. Now, again, you can argue with how he understands it. He says, why do you do it? So that she shouldn't be humiliated when she is being executed, because giving birth while you're being executed can be humiliating. And, giving birth in public can be humiliating. Having an abortion in public is humiliating. And therefore, he says, to save humiliation, you can do an abortion. Now, if that's the case, do you realize how far we just now went? Rav Moshe Feinstein saying, on the one hand, you can't even do it for a case where you have a fetus that is suffering from Tay-Sachs, will live a very short, painful life. And over here, you're reading somebody saying, yeah, you know, you can do an abortion in a case where there will be humiliation of the mother. That's enough of a reason. And of course, the difference over here is going to be that one side believes that fundamentally an abortion is murder, and the other side believes that fundamentally abortion is not murder. And how can they argue it's not murder? Because there's no source in the Gemara that says it's murder. Quite the opposite. We just now found a case in the Gemara that you're allowed to do an abortion and not to save the mother's life. Yes, we learned the Mishnah you can do abortion to save the mother's life, even at the end of 9 months. Now you learned a case you can do an abortion to save the mother embarrassment. Now, if embarrassment is enough a reason to perform an abortion, I'm going to say again, all bets are off. And this now is going to take me back to the Ben Ish Chai. Because what is it that Ben Ish Chai said? And I admitted that we're going to read it quickly and we skipped over a lot of his arguments. But take a look. Va'od, right over here. I'll get it to the top. Va'od, sana inecha v'ra mashakadz b'maharmit. Right? B'isha yisraelit mutilat ha'seki ma'bravor kadesh tapil imyesh b'zelet tzarech ha'em. But by the way, look how low, the hurdle is. If there's a need for the mother. And take a look over there. Matir ladir letzarfaim. V'nir diyesh pitchon pel about din lomar heich deika pgam b'mishpacha ubebizayon v'chilul Hashem. In any case, you're going to deal with hurting the family's reputation, embarrassment, or a desecration of God's name. Do you need me to bold all those things? Yesh pitchon pel lomar heich deika pgam mishpacha ubizayon v'chilul Hashem. Im yishar ubar velo tapiloto chashiv ze tzorich gadol. That's considered to be a big enough reason to do this. V'kfar amarti she'ein ani mosif mishali b'davar ze. And now talk about being coy. And I already said I'm not going to give my own opinion in this. Yeah, you don't have to bring your own opinion after you just now quoted somebody saying that you're allowed to perform an abortion in a situation of embarrassment, of the family reputation, of a chilul Hashem. Essentially, I think he told us pretty much that what he wants. Rav Yaakov Emdin, who says some shocking things, Rav Yaakov Emdin argued that, and it's not easy what he said. Here, it's in source number 10. Sha'alti im yesh isur lekalkel uba bebetin imo shezinta. If somebody had illicit relations, can you do an abortion? So first he quotes the Chavat Yair. Okay, so we're going to have to go back to the Chavat Yair then. Chavat Yair, V'yar Bachrach. And I want you to appreciate that all the people I've quoted so far, none of them are random rabbis. All of them at their time were the Gadoli Hador. I mean, that's very important to note. The Chavat Yair says, Tshuva al shela gadol echad, rofe mumcha, v'lamdan muflag, u'filosof, and he won't say what his name is, because he doesn't want to hurt any of the... He says, I was asked by a big Tamar Chacham, who's a rabbi and a philosopher, and he writes, v'al davar shelatech eshet ish shahara leznunim, about a married woman who got pregnant. Along the way, and it's very poetic if you need for me to read the poetry of all this. He describes and he says that she figures out at some point, first she asks, you know, how do I do tshuva? And then she finds out that she's pregnant. And now she wants to know what can she do to get this cursed seed from her. That's a direct quote from it. Here you want. L'shalshel zera hamikulal asher bikirba. She wants to know how to get rid of the cursed seed within her. He's trying to figure this out, but along the way, he starts to raise the question, what is the prohibition of abortion? Now, a lot of people bring the Arba Imyom argument in. 40 days is not mentioned in the Gemara regarding abortion. It is mentioned for a different reason. It's mentioned regarding a woman, if she can eat truma, right, in terms of how far down a pregnancy is. It has nothing to do with abortion, but it was brought into the abortion discussion. Maybe I'll have time to see more about that. Or maybe 3 months by Hakarata Ubar, when you can already see that somebody is pregnant, she's showing and so on, meaning how far in. But along the way, he questions what exactly is the prohibition of abortion. And along the way, he raises, maybe it's not any more than birth control. Maybe frustrating a life to come to the world, it's not any different from birth control than abortion. And I think many people would be very, very disturbed to know that he said that. But that is one of the things he brought up as a possibility. At the end of the day, he feels there must be more. But nonetheless, that is, here, take a look towards the bottom. Ubar kolshken shelo negrami tadal devade asal chetchila do adif min nachem belim shochtei ladim v'fligu b'isur tzar zer levatala v'tamishin or liot notzar b'kol tipa zera kodesh. And he starts talking about masturbation and about sperm being destroyed, and he's not talking over here about murder. He's just having discussion in a completely different way, and now you understand why Rav Yaakov Emdin starts there. Rav Yaakov Emdin's argument is actually really disturbing. What he says is that during the time that the Beit HaMikdash stood, if a woman was guilty of having an affair, then she would be put to death, as we already saw from that Mishnah. And if she would put to death, then the baby would die as well. So therefore, if we can't kill the woman today, because we're not allowed to do that, let's at least kill the baby, because that's the least we can do. Now, I hope you all realize that the logic in all of that was not all that simple. which is like, what are you talking about? I mean, it goes back to what I said before. One of the reasons that you can kill people is because they were warned, that there were witnesses and so on. You can't just go ahead killing people. Nonetheless, he thinks it's a mitzvah to prevent mamzerim to come into the world. That's what he thinks. And that's what I said is that Rav Moshe said, don't even talk to me about this, but I'm going to go back and say what I said before. This all will depend on what your starting point is. If your starting point is that it's murder, so then, you know, you're going to end up where Rav Moshe ends. If your starting point that it's not murder, so then, you know, why is it a problem? So again, when the Ben Ish Chai says, look at Rav Yaakov Endin, and look at the Chavat Yair, and look at the Mahar Ramit, so you realize, yeah, he's relying on all of those. Which then leads me to two more people to consider. One is source 14, and that's Rav Oldenburg. Rav Oldenburg is the one that Rav Moshe didn't want to cite by name. And he was the rabbi of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. He was on the Beit Din HaGadol in Israel. He actually sat on the same Beit Din together with Ravadi Yosef. And by the way, Ravadi Yosef actually agrees with him. And it's too much for me to do right now. But again, fundamentally, he does not believe that abortion is a Torah law. He does not believe it's murder. He allowed abortions after 3 months, after 5 months. I know of cases that he allowed it into the seventh month where there was extreme damage. He has his conclusions over here, which anybody who took the sources, you'll see the Sikkum HaYotzei Lezeh, where, again, you'll notice there's too many conclusions that you could say just no. The answer was there's many cases that he is permissive. Source 15 is the Sri Deyesh. Sri Deyesh was also one of the most important poskim after World War II, and he wrote a long essay also about Habalat Ubarim, and he says that once he saw Kuntri Zekotav Tzlini Chamesh Tzor Shana V'yoter B'toch Tshuva L'Shet HaRofei HaCharei Dr. Zakbach Zal, right, and was for the other rabbis in London. And now that he saw what was published in Noam, so two long essays on this, he said, okay, I'll put this out again. Kodim kol aleinu lever im ha'isur shel hamatat ubar al pi dat harishonim zal im ze isur midoraito midrabanan. He goes, first thing we need to figure out, is it a Torah law or rabbinic law? Secondly, what if there's no danger to the mother? What if there's some other lower level need? It's going to cause some pain and some emotional pain. Right? You know, would that be a good enough reason? He's going to discuss this whole thing. He also brings up the 40 days, even though he knows and he says that it's not so simple. At some point, he's going to say, he brings the Chavat Yair, that maybe it's the same thing as just, right? Maybe that's the whole problem over here, and there's no murder whatsoever. And along the way, he's going to tell us that he has no idea what really the Isser is. He's going to, and he quotes the Maharid, and he quotes all these other opinions. And he's going to tell that he's not sure. He quotes the same Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski that, okay, Sharam lo yitir chituch, right? Elam mishum shiro, Dave. And he writes, Elam kibim sharov ha-rishonim chokim ala Rambam. Most of the Rishonim don't agree with that Rambam, which means why did the Rambam become such an important voice in all of this? Most don't agree. Eli yesh latir l'smocha bal shilot yaveitz. No, you can listen to Yaakov Emdin. And then he says, and you can listen to Achiezer, you can listen to Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, who also was permissive, right? Oser tapalata ubar b'isha cholanit afilu kodim arba imyon l'chein l'masa adayin sarich l'tya'etzim gdolei hora'a. So I'm going to skip a bit more. In the end, right? V'isra l'arogat ubar eina mashum ritzicha ela mitamim acherim. And it seems that, you know, the killing of a fetus is not because of murder, but there must be some other reason. And it's not exactly clear what that reason is. One more person I want to look at, and then I will take questions and comments. Yabia Omer, that's Ravad Yosef. Again, also, as I said, a significant rabbi. And he says, V'od yesh mokom lomar debakai gavna shalom alu la'uber gimel chodashim shapukim samchinen al data poskim desirilim damatad ubar einu el midrabanan. Prior to 3 months, where the pregnancy isn't established according to halacha, in his opinion, that 3 months creates a chazaka, I'll explain if I need to. He says, before 3 months, we can rely on the opinions that it's only Drabban. And Mikoach Sfeik Sfeika. And this is typical Rav Ovadia logic. Sfeik Sfeika means that a Sufik Deoraita, if there's a doubt by a Torah law, then we're strict. If there's a doubt by a rabbinic law, then we are lenient. So a Sfeik Sfeika, a doubt upon over a doubt on a Torah law, makes something into a doubt of a rabbinic law, if that worked for some of you. And he writes that performing an abortion within the first 3 months should be allowed because it's fake, fake. A shema halacha kamando shema tat uba midrabanon. Maybe the law is like those who say that killing a fetus is drabanon. Ve'imtim salom da'avid minat Torah. And even if you claim it's a Torah law, shema pachot migimel chadashim einu elam drabanon. Maybe nonetheless before the third month, the first 3 months are finished, maybe it's only drabanan anyway because it's not, has not been established. Therefore, you can allow an abortion in a case where even there's no danger in the mother's life. And I will say the Rav Ovadia will continue along and have reasons to be lenient, reasons why he thinks that it's allowed. There are two approaches to this. You have those like Rav Moshe Feinstein, like Rabbi Soloveitchik, like Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who are three of the most important poskim, if you want to call Rav Soloveitchik a posek, but three of the greatest rabbis of the latter half of the 20th century, who are all saying that killing a fetus is murder and this should be avoided in all cases. On the other hand, you have people like Rav Adi Yosef, who turns out someplace in the middle. You have people like Rav Waldenberg, who know that there's another tradition, and then you see this whole other tradition. Because the Gemara never discussed it is why there's such a range of opinion over here. So if anybody's going to tell me that in their minds the Jewish law firmly fits into one side or the other side, I'm not completely convinced. I do want to show you, if you'll have time, and you're going to look at the sources, if you look at source 24, if you look at source 24, the Riaz, there's a whole question whether what is the attitude towards non-Jews. So the Rambam will say that a non-Jew can't have an abortion. He does say that. And that's why I clarified myself with the Jews. The Riaz, it's the Or Zeruah, he quotes the same Gemara the Rambam quotes, but he leaves out abortion as being a problem. And you see in what's in italicized, Rabbeinu Hishmitin Ubarim, Vitzarachin Tamadavar. Source 26 will also give an argument and claim that even if those argue that abortion is not allowed for non-Jews, that's unless the mother's life is in danger. Because if the mother's life is in danger, then it should be allowed. And he goes back to this whole argument if a fetus is considered to be a life at all, and I'm not going to go that much more into it, but what I will say is I've seen so many people argue and say things black, absolute. This is what Judaism says, and not appreciating nuance, not appreciating this difference of opinions. I could have said this in the very beginning, but I will say this now. I have allowed abortions. I've given psak on such. I am not convinced of the Torah level of it, even though some of my teachers have been convinced of it. Perhaps the way that I taught it, you were able to discern that I wasn't completely convinced of that side of it. But it doesn't mean that that one can be, flippant about it. Nonetheless, I think somebody who would say today, listen, I think the logic of the Ben Ish Chai is one which I want to go with. I think a posek has every right to do it, which is essentially what happened with the Rav Waldenberg. And I'll tell you now another secret, a rabbi's secret. You will have many, many rabbis who will say that abortion is absolutely not allowed and until a case comes up. And then a case comes up, they'll say, okay, go to this rabbi who allows it. And that ends up what's happening, because there are rabbis who are permissive, and rabbis who are not permissive will in many cases just send it over to the rabbi who is permissive. And maybe some of you think it's a cop out, maybe not. I don't know what to say. Many of you have heard me tell this story, so I will tell the story, which I first heard from Rav Schechter, and I once quoted it, and a big Talmud Chacham heard me quote it and said, it's impossible, it can't be. And I said, it's in writing. He goes, it can't be. And not only is it in writing, I've heard of Schechter speak about it multiple times, and each time he adds in more information. But I will end with this story, and then, as I said, if there are questions, I'm very happy to try to respond to them. And the story is over here in Mipnine Rabbeinu Kuntres Bnei Psak Halacha. It is found over there, which is in my sources on page 12, but I will tell you what it says. that a student of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was a physician, was once questioned about. There was a woman who was a Baalat Teshuva, who was in her 40s, who got pregnant for the first time. What's not written over there is that she had other health issues. From what I understand, she was obese, and there were some other diabetes, and there were some other issues involved. And the doctors had told her that the fetus was not going to be healthy. And she then asked this religious doctor who was on staff, what does Judaism say? So he called up his Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he asked him, he said, told him the whole case. He said, what should I tell her? And Rav Shlomo Zalman was very surprised. And he said, you know my opinion. My opinion is that it's murder. So that's my opinion. So the guy then had a little bit of chutzpah. The doctor said, you know what? You know, why don't you think about it? I'll call you back tomorrow. So Rav Shlomo Zalman, who, if you don't know, was the nicest man in the world, and Rav Shlomo Zalman said, fine, call me back tomorrow. So he calls him back the next day, and Rav Shlomo Zalman said, you know, I thought about it. She's not my student, and she didn't ask me a question. She is not obligated to follow my opinion. She wants to know what Judaism says about it. Tell her there's a very great rabbi in Jerusalem. His name is Rabbi Waldenberg, and in cases like the case that you just now presented, he allows abortion, and don't even tell her that I disagree. Tell her Judaism allows abortion in this case if that's what she wants to do, and she can follow Rabbi Waldenberg. And I love the story because it shows the humility of Rav Shlomo Zalman. He's not trying to force his opinion, even though he believes it's murder. But nonetheless, it really is indicative of something which is larger. And as I said, I don't think that if he were consulted directly from his student, somebody that who asked him for psak, I don't know if he would have done it. But I can tell you that there are rabbis who will absolutely turn to somebody who will be lenient in such cases or be of the position that abortion is allowed. And the reason why they will say that is because not that they allow murder. They just don't believe that it's murder. And the reason I don't believe it is murder, because there's no source that says that it's murder, at least directly in the Talmud, and even if regarding Jews, and even if you want to argue that the Rambam did believe that you needed to, you know, he needed to commit the whole Rodef argument to allow the abortion, as you saw was pointed out by the Sri Dayesh, the Rambam is not the only opinion over here, and the Rambam is not the majority opinion over here, and you realize that far more rabbis are lenient than you thought. But my main objective was to show that this whole discussion is a lot broader than I think a lot of people realize. If you all realize that it was broad in the first place, and I didn't show you anything that you didn't see beforehand, then I apologize for wasting your time. Are there any questions?
Yeah. I just appreciated that you gave the share. I knew it was broad, but I didn't know it was this broad. So yes, I did learn a lot. My husband had a question. He had to go, but he wanted to know why you translated Nivol as embarrassment. He felt that it should be dirtying in some way, like the woman would be dirtied.
He's correct, but that's the way that it gets processed by the poskim afterwards. That's the way they end up utilizing it as a situation of embarrassment. Nivul is the action, embarrassment is the emotion.
I'm wondering why this is so little known. Why the sort of murder opinion is so well known, and the
it's fascinating because every high school teacher teaches it, and I guess I know I don't know what to say, is that I also learned it that way when I was young. And I also, you know, this is what it is. And then it was only going further. You see that, oh, there's this whole other voice. And as you noted, Rav Moshe knows there's this other voice. He just was very strong. And you really have to wonder with Rav Moshe how much this public policy issue is really be, you know, part of what's fueling it. It really is quite interesting to what extent the politics is combined together with the halacha over here. But, you know, you can also get into arguments of Sfaradim versus Ashkenazim and Sfaradic sensibility in terms of family honor and so on. You know, from they're living with neighbors that are doing honor killings, and they're saying, oh, no, in case of family honor, you're allowed to do an abortion. Maybe there's an anthropological, sociological issue to be involved in this as well. But because there really is a very strong permissive stance coming out of, and that's where Ravadi doesn't have a very hard time of it, because he knows of the various other Sephardi rabbis who, I mean, for him, the Ben Ish Chai, even though he argues with them all the time, is somebody of really great significance. And the Ben Ishchai was fascinating, of saying, I'm not going to give you an answer, just give all these sources to somebody and let him decide what to do. I mean, like, what are you talking about? If those are the only opinions that you sent, it's obvious what his conclusion was going to be. So I found that completely, completely fascinating. And I just love the degree that people are just so confident of that they know, you know, what's going on. And every time I see people making pronouncements, I'm looking and saying, like, have you ever learned through any of these things? And if you just said, yeah, I learned through Rav Moshe, well, that's great. But that's not the whole story over here. And some people, yeah, I learned through Rav Moshe, and I learned through the Tzitz Eliezer. Okay, so that's a bit better. But there's lots and lots of things to learn and lots of opinion. But what I really tried to show was how the Mishnah and then the Gemara then flow into the Poskim over here. And I didn't do enough in the Rishonim, but I try to show how ultimately that's what you have to deal with. And what the Rambam did over here, it was not very simple. He made a couple of leaps. And on top of that, as I showed, you can read that Rambam very, very differently. You can read that Rambam that he was not making an argument of a Torah law. You can argue that the Rambam did not think that there was a Torah prohibition involved. Rather, it's an extension of the Torah law being used in a rabbinic situation, because ultimately the fetus is not a person, because that's what the Mishnah said. I mean, Rashi was right. Rashi was right that the reason you can kill the fetus is because the fetus is not a nefesh. How do you move away from that? I mean, that's what it said. So for the most part, the Jewish discussion taking place about what the Jewish side is, because obviously I can't stay away completely from Roe versus Wade. I mean, I can because I'm not a lawyer and I know very little about this. But so much of what I've seen people claiming that Judaism says is fascinating, because it's like a sliver of Jewish opinion when there is really much, much more. If somebody wants to say, yeah, but Rav Moshe is the Posek Hador and Rav Moshe sets the agenda, Rav Moshe says, okay, good. But to say that Rav Moshe is the only voice is just absolutely not correct. I mean, even when, because if someone would say Rav Moshe is the most important, yeah, so is Rav Ovadia. I mean, again, if we're just going to be honest. And also, to be honest, the Tzitz Eliezer was one step behind. I mean, he's not far behind in terms of what his stature was. So what we're dealing with is something which is complex, but these were all major poskim who were weighing in on this. And Rav Moshe, now you realize how great he was just to smack down anybody who disagreed with him. You know, get out of the way. I don't want to hear about that. Don't tell me about that. And don't quote that. And this is what we're doing. This is what it should be. And don't follow anything else. So it was very interesting, but it was, I mean, even somebody read Rav Moshe, they should be able to, if you can read intelligently, you should know just from reading Rav Moshe that it's not the only opinion. You should have already known there that there was much more opinion if one actually knows how to read. I'm sorry for saying that so strongly, but it's very clear now in retrospect that of course he was quoting others that disagree with him, and that's why he was so strict.
Is it meant to be vague? Do we conclude from the vagueness of the Gemara that sort of the Torah position is maybe that it should be vague and it should be undefined so that it can be applied as needed for each situation?
To allow the abortion in such a case. Again, people can disagree, but I think that the nuances involved in cases are sufficiently different that I would hesitate to write a document and say, you know, here's the flow chart. Okay, just figure it out. If this, yes, then no. If this, yes, then this. Then and just say, here's how you do it again.
I think you mentioned it briefly, and maybe you covered it at the point when I was distracted. But is there a significant difference in the approach to abortions for non-Jews to abortions for Jews?
Yes. Yes, but even that I'm going to hesitate on, because there is an agadic passage. It's an agadah. The Rambam then brings it to halacha, but it's an agadic passage that says that the non-Jews are guilty if they kill fetuses. But then that runs against the halachic principle that there's no law that applies to a non-Jew that doesn't apply by a Jew. Because it's like they have their seven mitzvot and then we have more. It's not that somebody converts to Judaism and then they have less obligations. So there is this statement. The question is how broad is it to be used? And again, some of the sources that I showed at the very end – would say that that in cases, let's say, where the mother's life is in danger, so then that would be okay. Or maybe the first trimester, the first 40 days. Maybe, again, the same argument that Rivadi was using and saying, well, first trimester, the fetus is not yet a fetus, it's not yet a life. If it's not considered to be a life, then even though if a non-Jew did an abortion, it's not talking about during that first, trimester, or maybe the first 40 days, or whatever it is, or maybe it doesn't count by the morning after pill, or whatever. So I'm just saying is that, yes, it's more of a discussion, yes, it's more complicated, and yes, it would require a whole nother shiur, but I don't believe, again, as I've seen people just say, no, that all Jews should be happy because, of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, because now this is what Judaism needs to have as the opinion for non-Jews, because non-Jews are not allowed to have abortions. Yeah, that's again, that's essentially halacha out of what we would call Bazooka Joe,
So we don't think that was what was motivating the
By the way,
Hamas
I've made that up. I
abortion.
just made that up. Bazooka Joe halacha. I just made that up. Yes.
So we don't think that was any of what was motivating Rav Moshe particularly. He was just motivated by Jewish abortions, not by non-Jewish abortions. I'm wondering how we understand his rates of the increase in abortions.
I think it's a larger issue. I think it's the sexual revolution which is bothering him. I mean, don't separate the abortion and birth control, and it's the sexual revolution which is taking place. I mean, that's what he's living through. So therefore, it's larger and it's societal. And how can a society exist like this? I think that's what's bothering him. Again, I don't want to. And by the way, if he himself did not have that line in there, with that self-awareness, I would not have the chutzpah to read it into him. But once he told us, so then how can I ignore that? Okay, but it's complex. But there's more permissibility than I think some people realized, and some of the opinions are shocking because nobody realized that there really is a Jewish tradition that was so much more permissive than I think some of us realized. Okay. So may all of this remain theoretical and people not have to get in situations that they need such solutions. But if people do need solutions, then hopefully there are rabbis who know how to bring about the proper solutions. Okay. B'sarot tovot.